Welcome to another episode of Bites of Wisdom. I'm one of your hosts, Ozzy Monroe. In today's episode, Jeremy John and I discuss DevOps, SecOps, and NetOps. We pretty much cover all the ops from their inception to what they actually mean today. We hope you enjoy today's episode. And as always, we continue to welcome your feedback, suggestions, and any ideas you may have. So please keep those coming. We can be reached via the email found in the show notes. Enjoy.
I'm Jeremy, John, Ozzy. We're all here again, and we're going to talk about DevOps. Today, we're going to do it a little more structured than we have in the past, and we're going to have segments. We're going to try to get things in order. We're going to try to follow a plan, something quite new for us. But with DevOps, I think there's a lot of interesting things that we can explore and talk about. I mean, looking forward to hearing some of the insightful things John and Ozzy have to say, and hey, it should be a good conversation. So, but to kick it off and to start it off, what is DevOps? Like, I mean, I have the definition in front of me from Atlassian, who I credit personally with kind of bringing this to the forefront. I don't think they actually did, but I credit them. DevOps is a set of practices, tools, and cultural philosophy that automates and integrates the processes between software development and IT teams. It emphasizes team empowerment, cross-team communication, and collaboration and technology. So I just read a bunch of words. What do you think, John? What do you think about DevOps?
I think the first time that I heard the term DevOps, it was a conference. Someone had entered, you know, someone was standing on a stage, and they were, honestly, there was probably a fire shooting from the stage because it was one of those crazy conferences, and chef conferences rather. And it was like, you know, we're gonna whip open a can of DevOps, and you know, it was this big.
Oh my god!
And you know, I didn't really know what it was until I had talked to other people and heard their thoughts. You know, my thought at the time was it was an acronym, a term for basically how to approach interacting with having an operations team, having an infrastructure team interact with product development or IT organization. And, you know, what I realized pretty quickly, you know, and this is my own take, is it was the eventual, I think it really was the inevitable, but it was the eventual kind of movement of agile away from simply software development and moving into the operations space for technology. And what happened a few years later, they didn't use the word Scrum, Jira, or, you know, all the terms that a lot of people associate with agile, but it really, really was about making system administration and managing infrastructure a lot less painful for organizations and enterprises.
My experience was the opposite. My experience was an ungodly amount of, oh my God, throwing things over the wall to operations team from software dev and them failing, nobody understanding what they were receiving, and then complaining loudly, and then the software devs going home and going like, well, I gave it to you, and then them not understanding what they were handing over, not understanding the complexity, and the separations between those worlds being horribly wrong. And that DevOps to me was, how do we put those things together so at least they're co-aligned with outcomes? Because when you have people that are handing off things that aren't fully baked to teams that don't fully understand it, guess what's going to happen? Bad outcomes. Things go down a lot. There's a lot of anger, there's a lot of mistrust, and there's a lot of bad things. And that's a good thing. That's a good outcome. It's because they were mismanaged, and this was a good way to do it. And I really do think it was so company specific of what that actually meant. I've never been to a company where the culture defines DevOps more than the term itself of what that company can absorb and do. So like, well, I say I take those two operations and develop them, put them together, and then you still have the culture that defines how they do that. Microsoft does the Shield model where you have the protectors from outside resources while still doing internal, and they have those. Other companies don't. But I think the culture of the company actually defines more of DevOps than actually the term does.
I agree with that part as well. Like, I think, you know, I think that the two, you know, our two explanations, they're not necessarily incongruent.
They're not. They do align.
Yeah. And in my experience is that left unchecked without an organization that really bought into the cultural change aspect. And really that means the change from everything you just described, throwing projects, throwing infrastructure over the wall and not having documentation and not having a playbook, a runbook, and not explaining on call schedules and just expecting a team to be there to pick up the pieces. And more importantly, the team to be there to make sure that the software that was built by developers, by software engineers, is stable. There's no difference with that way. You're just basically taking, you know, bad practices and using a term to coin it. Maybe you're using some new tools, a little bit of automation. But, you know, the real aspirational point of DevOps was to treat operations and systems administration more like software development. Quick cycle time, tools that make sense. Integrate those individuals into your sprints or your scrums or whatever how you define iterations for your product development team. The point is that they should just be part of your team's velocity and your capacity, even if they're a shared resource and even if they're only available for a certain, you know, number of sprints, even near an end of a project or something.
Hey, I actually think I agree with all those things you said, but I think those are an outcome from the push to DevOps. I think that once you created this alignment of operations and development and you get software developers that are going to write software to fix their problems, they're going to build tools to make those things better. But I don't think that was a goal. I think people were just trying to solve the operations nightmare. And the outcome you got was people actually started going, oh, I'm not going to do this all the time. Let me write code to make sure I don't do the stupid thing all the time. We got better because of it. I wish it was intentional, but I don't think it was.
So I agree, but I think what's interesting is if you look at the history, and you know, I wouldn't consider myself someone who started their experience in infrastructure, for lack of a better term, or operations. I wouldn't consider myself having started my career at that point at the beginning of DevOps. I very much was after it started. The term was. It had been around before. It has already started making the conference circuits. But what I noticed, and when I started to see the cultural aspects of what the practitioners and the people that were talking about it so much, but they were, the journeys that they went through were exactly what you just described. You know, they were part of an operations organization, or they were part of an organization that had operations that was entirely separate, that was in a silo, that was not part of a sprint team, and they were not treated like developers. And these individuals said, you know what, like it would make a lot more sense if we simply wrote software to do the things that we were previously logging into the shell, or maybe had a couple of shell scripts to execute. They started using tools like Jenkins, and they started using tools like, or building tools like Chef or Puppet to do these types of automations. And then eventually it turned into, you know, those principles, just like the same principles that originally, however many signatories on the Agile manifesto was, they turned into, it turned into an actual like practice. And then of course it turned into a term that, you know, O'Reilly started to build Bolt on top of. But the point behind it was that the term, maybe it didn't start off as meaning something, but everyone who was explaining it and demonstrating their experience at being a practitioner, they were pushing systems administration and operations teams, traditional teams where they were not a software development driven organization. They were pushing them towards software development. Test-driven development, you know, running, using new tools and using things like virtual machines to do local testing rather than testing in production. And all of these things, you know, 5 years before, I think some people were doing them, but they didn't exist as a practice. And they definitely did not exist as a, you know, a community of excellence.
Hazzy, You saw this from a slightly different perspective. I'd love to get your view of that transition, because it kind of took over a large part of software development and system administration, but you were next to it. So you saw it from a different perspective than us. I would be interested to see what you saw and how you had impacted your world.
Yeah. You know, I'm the newbie, right, to security, and don't have extensive background in development, actually zero background development. So I'm thinking that my take might be like, you know, like the dude that never read any comic books and watched one of the Marvel movies that was, everybody that read comic books said, oh my God, that was horrible. Which is also me, by the way. I wasn't a comic book guy. So I can watch the Marvel movies without any sort of prejudgment and can come in and say, that was good. And the purists are like, that was trash. It was horrible. Like that, you know, that was a horrible way to tell the story. They left this out, they left that out. So I look at DevOps and I see all the goodness in it. I see a point where, you know, I think Agile Scrum came before it, and then DevOps was sort of born out of it. And it was a way to increase velocity, to have a faster development cycle. Not bad, right? And then, you know, you had your operations folks and you have your developers, and they were separate, and it made sense to bring those two functions together and then build tools and have applications that you can use to automate the function of development and iterate much faster. So I've never had the sort of opinion, a salty opinion or the curmudgeon opinion of DevOps. And I don't know if that's going to end up as a hot take. I was going to be like me against, like, you know, it's going to be me against Jeremy. It's always me against Jeremy. But I've always had the opinion that it seems reasonable. It was a natural trajectory. Companies are trying to develop faster. It made sense to bring the two functions together. And then, you know, there's the aspect of DevSecOps, which we're going to get into in a little bit, but that's, you know, the other sort of natural progression of it. So that's sort of my take on it. I know it's a little bit dull. It's not very controversial, but that's, you know, that's the way I've seen it throughout the years.
So would you say, Ozzy, that before you heard the term DevOps, that you saw similar behaviors happening, like in other parts of wherever you were working?
You know, around the time that DevOps hit, I was doing network engineering, right? Trying to think if there was anything sort of similar that I can kind of compare to the DevOps sort of.
So in the DevOps curve of like what was affected, it was network engineering was near the end, and then it turned into. So
exactly. I know. I'd ask sort of what aspect of the whole DevOps.
That's a great question. For me, the aspect is is starting to involve the network operations engineers or whomever into the conversation at the time a product or a service is being developed, rather than at the end.
Absolutely. That's sensible to me, right? That goes along with the whole, this is really sensible argument. I thought you were asking me to compare the whole DevOps cycle to something else that I saw back in my career.
Personally, I think the catalyst. So I think DevOps gave a name to a practice that had already begun in a lot of organizations, but no one knew what to call it. And you know, in particular, you know, listen, it's not a secret. We were all at the same organization at the time that this thing was happening, right? And at that point, it wasn't the first time that when I started in DevOps, I gave a speech at ChefConf about the journey, Bloomberg's journey to DevOps. It wasn't new. It wasn't something that we weren't doing already. The difference is, though, that we now had a term to put to it, and we could then associate success to that term and outcomes.
I want to point out that as probably one of the most important things of the DevOps movement or idea was the name. And while I don't think any company really did DevOps the same way, it became a mantra of like, we're not going to do it the old way. Yeah. And if you would say the biggest value by far was that.
Yeah, it's the truth. It's absolutely the truth. And the change in behavior that we were able to see, the velocity, the ability to unstick things that previously may have taken weeks and months to get done. And it's not because any of it was malicious. It's because now we had a reason. We had something that we were saying, hey, we're trying this differently. We're going to include these people as part of our sprints during software development. And in fact, I came out of a software development team to start a DevOps team. So the fact that we were able to do that, and I think that happened at a lot of organizations, is really using that name as the beginning of the, you know, of I would say merging operations and software development.
I really do agree. I think that you're hitting on the part that I want to move to next, which is, what's value? Like the part for the people doing it, I actually think the name allowed them to attach to it and attach to a kind of an idea of, I'm not going to throw this over the wall. Nobody should be expected to throw this over the wall. Where they drew the line between those was independent per company. But then why do you have leadership talking about this? And so like this is something I'd like to hear Ozzy's perspective before we chime in with people that were in the thick of it. Like, Ozzy, when you saw that companies were starting to adopt this, you start seeing your organization you were at, what was the value and why were they doing it? And why do you think that was really interesting?
Well, I think I touched on the value before, right? You know, faster iteration, tools, introduction, bringing, you know, two functions together, development and operations, and then the security side came along later. I think if you ask me why you had senior leadership talking about it, I think it might have been, don't quote me, you guys check me on this, but it might have been the beginning of this era of acronyms and catch names for everything in the goddamn industry, right? And when I think about it, that is the only sort of negative that was floating in the back of my head when it comes to DevOps and DevSecOps. I think about it, and you know, you look at cloud technology, this, you know, you change one little feature in a product and it has a whole new acronym to it, right? So I feel like that was the beginning of it. And that maybe that's why, if there's any negative connotation that I have, it might be because of that, because I feel like, God damn you, DevOps, you started this whole nonsense. But I think that's what happened. It started to become, first it was agile. I got to be honest. I think agile became the buzzword, right? Oh, yeah. Everybody needs to switch from waterfall to agile, scrum. People were doing it without any real reason to go to a scrum methodology. They just said, all right, let's have stand-ups. Let's have sprints. And it was kind of like, all right, this is like an infrastructure deployment. How are we doing this in sprints? So first came agile and then came, you know, DevOps. So the buzzwords started to catch. And I think it's pretty much taken off since then. Like now you have executives that are dropping acronyms all over the place because those are the catchphrases. Those are the things they read about in the news. Those are the things that the salespeople that get to speak to executives are promoting and trying to sell. And that's how they stay relevant and stay connected, right, with the industry. So I think that's, you know, why it's taken off. And I even though I have a little bit of a negative opinion about the catchphrases, I still think it's something that's been incredibly positive for companies.
See, I'm going to be a little more specific in the what I think was so successful. I think DevOps stopped the bickering. And I think that the acceptable bitching from team to team that they don't pull their share was a ground shift change for management, in that they were now, and it's you, that's the part that management heard, was is they didn't hear the constant bickering, team X wasn't doing Y, blah, blah, blah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. But what you actually got was everybody's responsible for their own shit. Yeah. And by doing that, you can't complain. Sure, people are going to complain, but it went from a constant everybody complaining about their operations team or their development team to they're complaining with their managers that they need to work better and not be in silos. And it's just, it goes from like 90 decibels down to 40. And I do think that was why management started listening. It's why I started paying attention, because suddenly the conversation was no longer the Spider-Man pointing to two people. It was, point at your own selves. You're responsible for both parts. And I thought that was awesome. And I don't think the accountability is what management was first catching on to. I think that came later. They just like the quieter from complaining from developers and operations teams.
But listen, I didn't state this before because I sort of felt like maybe it didn't have to be stated, but I'll explicitly state it now. Senior management, you know, they were being sold on, hey, we can put product out there much faster, right? Mm-hmm. We can develop much faster, quicker time to market. Oh, okay. How are we doing that? We're doing that with Agile. Oh, fantastic. Yeah, okay. And then to your point, Jeremy, you fold in your point of, you know, cooperation and collaboration and bringing the teams together with DevOps. And now it's like, wait, we can do this faster. Maybe even reduce some headcount, some resources, right? By having individuals that might be skilled at both in development and operations to maybe do both functions, and you might be able to reduce your workforce. So it became very attractive to senior management for those reasons.
John, thoughts? Chiming in?
You know, I can't say no. You know, I was actually using all of these arguments to sell the creation of a DevOps team to senior management, right? So this it absolutely was the things that we were using. I think the thing that I would point to, and you know, back to there, we saw the benefits, right? And we saw the ability to move faster, and we saw the ability, you know, one of the first things that the team did was move away from a product team that had weekly deploys. And the goal that the DevOps organization set at Bloomberg Web Operations at the time was to, instead of having once every 2 weeks the deploy where the operations team, which was me and one other person, would have to stay up till 1 a.m, we were doing live deploys in the middle of the day. And then it moved to multiple deploys throughout the day. And then it moved to A/B testing throughout the day, zero downtime deploys. And, you know, the benefits, and I think it's the same benefits that we saw with the cloud, is the ability to get results faster, safer, means that you can deliver features and functionality to market, you know, better. And it became, you know, it did become a buzzword. It became, you know, let's sprinkle a little DevOps on it. And it's true. It's absolutely true. Like that literally was phrases that people were using. But the reality was, let's take some mental capacity for a team that we know is capable of doing the things we're asking them to do and dedicate their time to work together to get to this outcome. And that's really what it was about.
One of the things is when the SRE movement got attached to a bunch of all this, that's when I really started paying real attention, because it was starting to get that development model at scale and start building out the services in a way that I never thought in interacting happened in the DevOps. It was a lot of scripts. It felt like it was solving a team's problems. But mm-hmm. then when it got to SREs, and we got the real scale behind some of this, tools of commoditizing things, and you're really building out a stable platform on top of tools and ways of operating things at large scale, that wasn't possible without the first move to DevOps and the agile moves. But that's when I saw the value of delivery, the value of getting the teams moving fast because they could trust the infrastructure that they were doing. They could trust the monitoring and alarming. They could trust their peers, not because they needed to trust John or Ozzy, but because they knew the alarms fired. They knew the infrastructure deployed. They knew that when they went through an A/B testing, it happened in an effective manner and they could roll from deployment A to deployment B. And that was the true value of why I saw the companies going into it. I thought DevOps was a required precursor, but I saw it for the development teams. I saw SRE as the culmination of all of those ideas coming together to drive real value very quickly. Maybe I'm just being argumentative at the point. I think, as you know, nothing like Jerry to be argumentative, but I think that was what cinched it for me. All right. So I don't want to talk because, I mean, there's always a negative ways of doing that. And I think that's going to come up in our next segment. So I do want to transition a little bit to our next segment if anybody wants to talk about anything else. Cool.
Yep. Let's do it.
All right. So next segment, I want to step into new careers in DevOps. I still see these discussed on forums. I think it's a broad topic. So this will tell us a little more of the negative sides of DevOps, the cultural sides, what to look out for. But John, you're advising somebody who's looking to go in, they've been looking and they're looking at roles to say DevOps. How does that person that's looking for a role in the DevOps world know that the company that they're going to go talk to isn't just asking them to sling Terraform all day and that they're actually expected to do something interesting?
Yeah, that's a hard one. My personal suggestion is if the title of the job is DevOps engineer, stay away. Because DevOps is not a job. It's not a role. Like, it's how the organization operates. And SRE, that's a role.
Mm-hmm.
And I think people are saying, oh, you might just be mincing words. I'm really not. Because you know, the point of DevOps is, you know, we explained it in the first segment. It was the culmination of understanding the value mapping of moving infrastructure and operations teams as fast as the product development team, right? And the people that were doing that, they might not have called themselves SREs, but that's where they were going. Now, SRE itself, Google coined the term. And, you know, there are these two books written about it, I think, from the people at Google. Great books. They put a framework around that organization, you know, focused on service level objectives, service level agreements, monitoring, tracking everything, monitoring MTTR, MTDB, and just using data to measure your success or your failures. The job of SRE is to make your site or your infrastructure reliable. That might mean a whole variety of things. It might mean that you are using Terraform to build a pipeline to automate the deployment of a Java application to a cloud infrastructure. It also might mean that you are an engineer that is building a platform as a service product to one click and build a database on demand. It might also mean that you are a person that is building a software audit system that allows you to evidence information for a SOC 2 audit.
It also could mean you're building Terraform so that they can do a P2V while they move to the cloud by just moving large machines. And that's the part I think that I want to talk about in this one is like, how do you suss out that a company's mature enough and actually doing the DevOps versus doing, like I said, doing a P2V, but we use Terraform. So it was DevOps, and I'm using air quotes the whole time because I've seen that. I've met with people that have gone to companies and like, I was so excited to get my first DevOps role and I was excited to be doing Terraform. And then I found out that I was using Terraform to build images and then they would come along and use their SSCM to deploy their applications on it afterwards and then do manual upgrades. And he wanted it. And I get why he was like, this is not the same thing.
But it's a stepping stone. So let me answer the first question, you know, how do you identify if an organization is mature enough in their, you know, in their software development lifecycle practices to be an organization that is a DevOps organization. You ask them questions that you would ask as a software engineer. You know, how do you manage your work? How does, you know, who's responsible when an application gets deployed and there's a problem at night? Like, how does that interaction happen between the development team and who is responsible? And you ask questions about the business process or incident management or change management. These are all ITIL practices that are well documented. Not all organizations call them the same things, and not all organizations follow a framework to the T, but they all have something like that. Maybe it's just an email. It says the software is just deployed. It's at this version on these sites. But ultimately, if you want to be at a place where you are building infrastructure in a reliable way, you need to ask the questions about what your job is going to be about. Just like if you're a software engineer and you want to be, you know, building video games instead of, you know, building, I don't know, like a React website that's just accepting data input and building a report for someone. Like, you got to ask that question. What's my job actually going to be? And most importantly, we've had this discussion before, you should try and find people that are in that role currently and talk to them before you, if you're able to, before you join the company or even apply.
You hit on what I would always talk about, which is ask the how, and then if they say no, great, when. Not everybody is there now, but if you ask the question of, oh, are you doing a CI/CD deployment for your applications? No. Great. When is your expectation to be there? Oh, we don't have one. All right. Now I'm a little more concerned. I understand that the reality is we're not all at the same place. They're just on this transformation journey, blah, blah, blah. But suddenly you're like, oh, you don't even have a timeline? Great. Let's explore that conversation.
Is that going to be what I'm doing? Those are the things you want to ask, because if their answer is no, you're not, then you need to ask, well, why are you hiring someone that's an SRE or a DevOps focused job? Like, what are they going to do? Are they just here to pick the phone up at night? Because if that's the case, that's not a DevOps organization.
Okay. That's an ops organization with a new name.
Yes, exactly. They're trying to get people, they're trying to fool you into joining their organization.
Is that really any different from, and we might be all disagreeing, but just want to kind of pull it apart. Is that any different from any other job that you would walk into, at least any other tech job? I think a lot of people, when they go into interviews, expect to just be asked questions and they don't turn around and ask questions to the organizations. I sort of liken it back to when I was in network engineering, and I've seen roles where people would run a script, put in an IP address, and it would configure the router for you completely. And I've seen other roles where you would be configuring BGP, OSPF, and you had to know what you're doing. I liken this to that. There's not really much difference, right? And how you figure that out is, to John's point and Jeremy, your point as well, like, you ask in the interviews, you ask those questions, right? What will be required of the job? Right? For network engineer, how do you build your router configs? Oh, well, we run a script. Well, okay. So what's my role going to be? Oh, I'm punching in the IP address. Okay. Well, then I'm looking for something a little bit more than that. Right.
Right. Right. Or, you know, or ask the question of like, great, that's what you do. So how are you making that more efficient? Am I going to be involved in automating that process so that there's no human involved? Right? And, you know, that's gets to the heart of kind of what a job in SRE, a job in modern operations organizations really is about, like being the person that is thinking about how to take something that is traditionally or could be traditionally a manual, you know, OSPF or BGP configuration, instead saying, you know, we need to do this safer. We need to make sure that the inputs that we're putting into that config are correct. You know, you would never want to set your, I'm not going to talk about that, but well, you would never want to, there are things you would never want to do. And, you know, if you go back, yes, if you go back to some of the principles of agile, test-driven development, unit testing, integration testing, systems, you know, testing. These are all things that you can only really do if you have a scaffolding and a framework to execute changes on. Otherwise, the only way you're testing is if you have, Ozzy, to your point, someone sitting at that terminal at that command line typing in those things and checking the response code. Was it true? Was it false? Did it make the change? Did it not make the change? And then looking into a spreadsheet or a notebook to see what the previous value was. Like, that should not be. And honestly, if someone was doing that, it's usually better than most organizations because they usually just say, fuck it, it's ready, ship it.
I agree. And but our part I want to argue about is something that goes back, because I can't not be confrontational, is the amount of networking organizations that have gotten there haven't kept pace with the systems and infrastructure teams. And this is something that I see that I want to suss out what you guys think is, like, I've seen the network teams lag far, far behind the rest of the infrastructure to the point of it be they're becoming to the ignored and this very important technology pushed aside because they are keeping pace. Is that something that you guys think is a concern, or what's your thoughts on that?
Well, when you say networking, you mean like WAN or, you know, LAN networking? Because I think it's different. I think they're probably, I think that when I say different, I don't mean like my opinion is they're different as far as technology wise. I think they might be different as far as the pace at which they're maybe advancing, right? Where I would say probably wide area technology years ago was not really advancing as much as on the LAN side. And now it's probably the reverse, right? With, you know, software defined, you know, networking and you don't see as much advancement on the LAN side as you do. That's why I asked the difference, because I think there's probably a little bit of a difference between the two now as far as how they've been advancing.
I mean, I think that absolutely did lag. You know, I'm not a network engineer by trade, and one of the few things in operations I would never claim to be is a network engineer. I haven't had to solve that problem in depth yet, but I can tell you that out of all of kind of the pieces of infrastructure that were automated and had APIs and had testable frameworks around them, networking was the last one.
And I'm going to say it still is.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, hold on. When you say it still is, are you including, because I think there is an argument to be made for some of the technology out there, like VPNs. You know, we did a whole tail scale episode.
I was going to bring that up.
Yeah. So I think when you talk about cloud technology, edge, there are components to it that, I don't know, are you considering that networking?
Well, or do you not? You're going to hit the point that you're going to get the point I was saying is, since I think people are writing software tools to get around the networking team because they're going too slow. I think tail scale is a solution for networking not being able to keep pace with everything else. And so I've seen the amount of tools to get around the networking team being developed is staggering. It's like, how do I not have to engage with them because they can't move fast enough?
But why don't you consider tail scale like just another networking team?
I don't, because it's a software solution built by people that have adopted this to get around the fact that they are willing to put APIs into the network.
But hold on a second. If you had a company that's providing software defined networking solutions, right? Would you consider that networking?
Would the team open that up to the developers to access?
So I'm gonna disagree with you there a little bit, Jerry.
Perfect.
So, you know, I think the point, so I think I get where you're going, and I don't disagree with the reason why some of these solutions started. So I'm going to use a different example than Tailscale. We're going to talk a little bit about Kubernetes.
Perfect.
And I mean, overlay networking with Docker, right? Like Do you think that was introduced to get around networking teams?
Less so there. Those were mostly security. Different problem, different group that was a little lagging, but same problem, not keeping pace. So you're going to, like, I have a strong opinion that is prominent that if you can't keep, if you can't keep pace with the people deploying the apps, you're failing. And I'm going to say security and networking for a long time have failed because they didn't adopt these services fast enough.
I don't disagree with that mentality. Yeah.
Right. So that was my metric for failure. Not whether they were good enough, not whether they were doing the right thing, but they weren't keeping pace. And so you get these abstractions to push the network away because they were too slow. And what I think is that we lost a huge ability to have the network be an enabler of these services and the network to be a compounding factor to make applications even better. But everybody's so hesitant to engage with them. I'll give you a very concrete example is that the networking team can move packets more efficiently to distribute them across multiple hosts. So goddamn well, it's not unbelievably amazing. But every software dev will opt for HA proxy rather than talk to the next networking team because those teams can own it, their responsibility, but because those teams aren't receptive to working together yet.
I don't know if that's necessarily the reason. I think that is a result of, you know, of the tools being used by the team in particular. If we're just using, you know, a fictitious people, and the fact that some of these teams in question are trying to do things that are out of the ordinary process. So I'm gonna slightly change the example you flagged and say, you know, that a networking team probably wouldn't get involved with network overlays inside of a cloud network stack because they don't really need to. But if you went and you tried to, you know, do things like BGP inside of a, you know, even a private cloud, like they're going to be like, it's not really a good idea, even though there are APIs for that. And I think it's, you know, I think the thing that I would point to is a lot of it depends on, you know, the point in time that someone's trying to do something and also the solution they're trying to do. Because you're right, like HA proxy as an example, it's much easier. Well, maybe not easier is not the word, but it's much more efficient to use an appliance that was dedicated to doing that, like a F5 or some type of load balancer, and they have APIs. But is it quicker? Because the person in the software development is like, oh, I get a shell. I can just write these three commands. And of course, it's not quicker than someone just on a machine and doing it themselves. But,
But I'm just saying is there was, so DevOps was the combining of dev and ops to make them more efficient to solving that, but they forgot security and networking.
They should have been pulled a dev net ops.
Dev net sec ops.
Yeah.
And then... We wouldn't be trying to cram these things in later. And so like that's the interesting thing. And from me on this is I think we missed things in this space with solving ops and dev. And I think there was so much value in getting a little more crammed into that box because we would all get that velocity. I would kill for it in security. The networking team would be much happier with being part of that. And it would be a faster delivery across all the services.
I agree.
I don't disagree either. I think it's just you and I, it's just semantics, right? I think like the difference is, I think to fall back to tail scale, I think that could be an example of another network solution, right? Just where network solutions advancing. So I think and maybe I'm just being a little bit, because that's my background networking. So I'm being a little bit protective of networking, but it's, you know, I get what you're saying and you're not wrong, but I think we should.
But you want to argue with me?
We should just expand the bucket of networking to include all this, the new stuff.
I would put this one thing I think, Jeremy, you know, you've kind of said that DevOps and, you know, kind of did not take into account network and security, which I agree with. I remember in particular being in conversations with you and others on the security of the network side where we were bringing those things together. The only point that I would make is that take a look at some of the Amazon offerings for more advanced network automation. They didn't exist until more recently than some of the other, you know, compute services, right? So the NLB load balance, you know, network layer load balance versus the old ones or the Amazon Cedar security policy agents, right? These are all newer things. So I don't think it's at fault necessarily because of the, I think some of these tools are, and for things just didn't exist.
I also was on the other side of that conversation. I was wrong. I was very wrong. I look back and I said I was wrong and I still agree I was wrong because I was the person saying no and I was fucking wrong. So on that bombshell, to quote Grant, we're going to move on to an all new segment called The Final Word. So here's how the final word's going to work. So the final word is where one of us or a guest will get the final word on the conversation. They get 2 minutes to summarize it, say whatever they want, give their hot takes, give their opinions, and there's no responding from anybody else. This is the final word on DevOps in this conversation for our audience. And tonight, John gets the final word.
I'm going to mute.
I think I've talked a lot about this already, but no, I really think that this conversation needs to happen more. And you know, the topics that we discussed today, we started with explaining what is DevOps to each of us and each of us having a different perspective through our careers and where we were when the origin of this term happened. Yeah, you know, you learned about what DevOps meant to us and how it affected our careers. Then we moved to kind of talking about, well, what do you look at for organizations that are doing particular practices? How are you aware of if something is really, quote, DevOps or doing something in a modern way where operations isn't just throwing things over the wall? And the answer really is like what you would do with really any job. Ask questions. Ask about how you're going to be doing some of the work that's being put on your plate. Are you going to be part of a process to make things better? Not everything is going to be automated out the door. Don't expect that at any job. There's always going to be work or else you would not be getting hired to do that work, right? But you want to make sure that there's a roadmap to get there. There's an idea to get there. And you're not just going to be the person on the other end of a phone call at 3 a.m. because, you know, some developer decided to ship a product on Friday night. And finally, I would say, you know, we talked about network and security being a little bit of laggers here. Personally, I agree with everything that my two co-hosts said, that absolutely, you know, it is the case. Network and security are still being built out. Network is, regards to automation, network is much further along than security. But security, if you look at some of the products and the services that are being offered by the public cloud providers, and you look at some of the open source products like Open Policy Agent, they're getting there and they're building these things. If you look at a mature product like Tailscale, they're adding this functionality into their enterprise products with the ability to do software-defined networking, software-defined security policies, dynamic networking, dynamic security policies. And these things from a technology perspective did not exist when DevOps started, when Vagrant was a thing that everyone used. And, you know, now it's Terraform. Eventually, it'll be open tofu because, like I said 6 months ago, HashiCorp's gonna get bought by a hedge fund. That's just a fact. It's my final word.
Thank you for listening to another episode of our podcast. To support us, please subscribe on LinkedIn, Apple, Spotify, and YouTube. We love feedback. You can reach us at feedback@biteswisdom.com. Until next time, stay curious.